West Virginia's new Roman Catholic bishop was installed late last month at the Cathedral of St. Joseph in Wheeling. Bishop Mark Brennan was previously Auxiliary Bishop of Baltimore. Pope Francis named the 72-year-old Brennan to replace Bishop Michael Bransfield, who resigned in September 2018 amid allegations of sexual and financial misconduct. Glynis Board spoke with the new bishop. Here's some of that conversation.
Clearly, the former Bishop Michael Bransfield left the diocese in a crisis of confidence. Now, Archbishop Laurie, you know, he described a culture of fear that was created under his tenure, and there were measures that he put in place to try to ensure a higher degree of transparency and safeguards against abuse. What actions do you hope address that eroded trust?
Long believed the only way to overcome evil is with good. You have to just do good things. Our faith is not meant to be sterile. It's meant to be fertile. It's to produce good things. The image that Jesus uses, the vine, branches have to be attached to the vine, but if they are, they will produce good fruit. So to try to live our faith well and with the works of charity and justice that our faith really propels us to engage in, that's, I think, how you overcome the bad behavior of the past. You know, you can't ignore it, the past. You can't deny that it happened. On the other hand, you also can look forward and try to live a better way. And I hope that I can be the kind of shepherd for the flock of this diocese that will lead by example, you know, not just by words, but to overcome a legacy of mistrust and fear and all that by a different kind of style of leadership, you know. So that's the best I can offer on that. You know.
It seems, are there decisions yet to be made that have anything to do with Michael Bransfield that you have to make?
Yes, I think as you're probably well aware, the Holy See, or you know, Rome acting as the Pope is the universal pastor of the Catholic Church, imposed on Bishop Bransfield two very significant prohibitions, and they are significant. He was planning to retire here. I've seen the very nice apartment that had been built for him. He's not going to get to live there. He's not allowed by the Pope to live in the state of West Virginia. The second one is that he's not allowed to celebrate any public liturgies. The Catholic Mass is the most common liturgy. But a baptism ceremony, a funeral outside of Mass, a wedding ceremony outside of Mass, those are liturgies too. He's, for someone who has been doing that for nearly 50 years, to be told, you can't do that anymore. No public Masses, no public liturgy of any kind. That is a very significant prohibition. What I'm asked to do is to oversee a process of him making some kind of amendment for the damage he caused to individuals and to the diocese. And that is in process. And I've already begun consulting with people here. And then we were doing some analysis of spending and so on to see, what is an appropriate way for to ask him to make amends. If he cooperates with this process, it will show, I think, another side of him, which I hope we will see. If he does not cooperate, we'll still be able to impose a kind of amendment process on our own. You know, better with his cooperation, but it can still be done without it.
Okay. And it's increasingly well known that the Wheeling-Charleston Diocese is one of the more wealthy diocese in the country. And yet here we are sitting in one of the poorest states and even right. one of the poorest neighborhoods in right. this region. So I'm just wondering, how is that wealth being used to combat those cycles of poverty? Or how do you think it could be used in the future?
Well, there are things that I have learned. There are already things that are done by the diocese with the money that it has. Some of which comes from somebody left us some oil wells down in Texas, you know, and we have mineral rights somewhere. I got to find out more about that, you know. At any rate, yes, there's an endowment which seems to be fairly large, several hundred million dollars. Okay, wow, that's a lot of money, you know, pay for everything. Well, the diocese, you know, with an endowment, you try not to dip into the principal. Or if you do, you're going to diminish your interest. You use the interest from the principal. And the Diocese of Wheeling Charleston is using that to support small schools and parishes that otherwise would close. They can't maintain themselves. I think there are efforts being made by Catholic Charities of West Virginia to assist in meeting the opioid crisis. This is like the epicenter for the whole country, from what I've learned. Wow, this is awful. And I'm going to see if we can do more. But I think the resources that the Diocese of Wheeling Charleston has, from what I have learned, remember, I've only been the bishop here for 8 days, so there's a lot more for me to learn, right? But the resources are being used in a healthy way to sustain good works of the church in its schools and parishes and agencies, you know.
So it's believed by many people in the community that under Bransfield's leadership, several important organizations in this region have suffered, mm-hmm. namely Wheeling Hospital, which is now being sued by the federal government, and Wheeling University, formerly Wheeling Jesuit University. And it's tempting to try and like unpack some of those claims, but I'm much more interested in your perspective as the new guy in what you think about the present and the future going forward. So I'm curious, what role, if any, does the diocese have to play in addressing the ongoing healthcare crisis in this region, in the Northern Panhandle? And I'm curious if the diocese is involved anymore with Wheeling University.
The Diocese of Wheeling Charleston is definitely involved with Wheeling University. My understanding is that we have provided Wheeling University with $2 million to carry it through this year for expenses, salaries, all those things, right? Because their own revenue isn't sufficient. I will give them credit that they have met their goal. They had a goal of 125 new students this year, and they have met that goal. That's significant, I think, on their part. So we still are certainly involved. Longer term, I need to get my head wrapped around this because, you know, I just don't know the particulars that well and what makes more sense, which makes the most sense in terms of the continuance of that institution of higher learning. It's the only Catholic one in the state, only Catholic institution of higher learning in the whole state of West Virginia. I'd love to see that stay as a Catholic institution. You know, we've been doing university education for centuries, you know, so we'd like to continue here to do it. But we got to find a viable way to do it. Right in the hospital, again, that's another thing. I don't know enough about it to say anything in particular. I hope it can be resolved appropriately, but I don't know what appropriately is. I have to know more about it, but I don't at this point know enough about it to comment in any significant way.
We know, you know, Michael Bransfield retired, as many bishops do, at 75. And forgive me if this is an ageist question.
Right.
Some parishioners have expressed concerns, since you're already into your 70s, that you won't be here long enough to sustain positive change. Yeah. Can you address that concern?
Sure. It was intimated to me when I was asked, you know, would I come here, that Rome would be very flexible about that 75 age limit. Now, I could drop dead tomorrow, okay? Who, I mean, you don't know. I have to drive to Charleston, maybe a semi hits me and boom, I'm history. So, but assuming that I have reason, my doctor had an appointment on the 30th of July and he said, Father Brennan, your parents gave you good genes and you're taking pretty good care of them. So I have pretty good health, you know, stamina, and keep going. So assuming that I can, then I think 75 will come and go without any change in the Episcopal leadership here, all right? Some Catholics may remember, and I was a boy when this happened, but a fellow named, Giovanni Roncalli was named, was elected Pope by the Cardinals in 1958. He was, I think, 77 years old. He lived another 4 or 5 years. He called the Second Vatican Council, which has had a tremendous impact on the life of the Catholic Church worldwide in his brief time as Pope, right? It is possible to get something done if you work at it with purpose and determination and trust in God and have cooperation for people. So I hope that all of that can be true here.
I know you've only been here 8 days, but what have you learned so far about the Catholics, about the Catholic Church in West Virginia? What plans do you have going forward to continue to explore this place?
Well, something I have experienced up here in Wheeling this week is, I think, still a very vibrant Catholic Church. I meant it in my inaugural homily when I said, I really thank God for the West Virginia Catholics who have maintained their faith during all this hard time, the dark clouds that have been above the church here. So I really do admire that, because it is hard to do it when you see the leadership is not what it should have been. What I hope to do is what the church has to do. The Lord commissioned us to bring good news to people, you know? And there's been some bad news here. We've got to bring good news. And the church's mission is to bring the good news of our Savior to people and hopefully invite them to put their faith in Him. So, you know, Catholics are less, I think, about 4% of the population in this state, and a lot of them concentrated up in this area. Certainly over in the Eastern Panhandle, quite a viable Catholic area. Charleston, I think, has some presence. There are other, but little bits and pieces, but we're not very numerous here. We're not a Catholic club. We're a movement to going forward to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to other people, you know. So that's my vision for the future, and that's going to take the rest of my life, and it won't be done when I'm gone.
Well, you know, and I'm glad that you mentioned that the future is something that is really on a lot of people's minds. Right. You know, there are very few young people in the pews these days, especially here in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And a lot of young people I've spoken with point to what they call an antiquated church doctrine that excludes people who are, for example, gay and lesbian. Uh-huh. I'm just wondering, how do you reach out to young people in this state today, given that perceived culture? What's your plan?
You know, if you might recall hearing from the Centers for Disease Control down in Atlanta, studies that have been done that showed that the suicide rate of teenagers has been going up somewhat rather dramatically, including among girls, worse among girls than among boys, the rate of increase. And the rate of depression of young adults has been going up. But the rate of religious participation by young people going down. I think those trends are related. Again, we have good news to share. If you look at chapter 6 of John's Gospel, Jesus gave a hard teaching. Many disciples walked away from him, St. John says, because of the hard teaching. Some will walk away from the Catholic Church because of these hard teachings. But ultimately, we have to speak the truth in love. Again, with the voice of a mother who cares about her children, speak the truth. And some people are going to respond to that well. If some don't, they don't. I mean, I can't control that, you know. But I have to be faithful. Mother Teresa said, you know, that we're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful. If we are, I think we'll be doing what the Lord wants, and ultimately, long term, I think it's going to be for the benefit of the people that we engage with.